Hi, this is What You Say in English, Season 3, Episode 12.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 12 of What You Say in English, the podcast in which I listen to you and give you my professional feedback. Today, I have a very special guest with me. His name is Lander Hawes. He's the CEO of Kinjugo, which is an edtech startup that has developed a game for learners of English, especially the people who want to prepare for the IELTS exam. Lander was at the University of East Anglia when he started developing the idea for Kinjugo, which is a gamified app with 450 sentences across the different IELTS topics. The game is designed to make repetition and learning more engaging and fun. And Lander and I will be discussing the potential of gamification in education and how Kinjugo is revolutionizing the way English is taught. So stay tuned for an exciting conversation with Lander Hawes, the creator of Kinjugo. So hi, Lander. How are you?
Hi, Frank. I'm good. How are you today?
Thank you very much for coming to my podcast and talk about your products and also about yourself. Before we get started, I would like to know, or the listeners would probably want to know, a little bit about you. What can you tell me about yourself?
Okay. Well, my name is Lander Hawes. I'm the co-founder of Kinjugo, and we make gamified learning apps for English language teaching. I have been an English language teacher for about 20 years. I've been with the last 12 of that, 13 of that in the UK, mainly working in higher education with Chinese students. Prior to that, working in academies and also in Spain for 4 years, and really sort of going through the whole journey of becoming an English language teacher. So sort of going in there and knowing virtually nothing to begin with, and then being a kind of, enthusiastic pronunciation teacher and sort of becoming very engaged with the whole sort of project of language teaching and also academic skills teaching in universities.
It's very interesting you mentioned pronunciation, like you are enthusiastic about teaching pronunciation, because I know for many years, in my case, for example, I avoided teaching pronunciation, and I know a lot of friends, colleagues, other teachers that refrain from teaching pronunciation. Now I'm more confident, basically because I was not very confident in my teaching skills, you know, teaching pronunciation. What about you? Did you find it easy in the beginning, or?
I found it very difficult. I mean, like you, it was something that was kind of on top of the mountain. You know, it seemed a very kind of difficult skill to master. The phonetic alphabet was just, you know, not something that was kind of within
reach. Not really friendly, no.
Yeah, and you know, coming from the English education system, I had never seen it before. So it was completely new information for me. And I think I found generally with my development as a teacher that there were several kind of key moments, kind of key sort of eureka moments when things fell into place and I sort of turned a corner as a teacher. And one of those with pronunciation was really seeing Adrian Underhill's work and seeing his approach to pronunciation, which was...
That's the Bible in pronunciation.
Which is the Bible in pronunciation, yeah. And once I saw that, I was like, oh, okay, right, that's what we're talking about now. Yeah. And really that led me into doing a lot of physical pronunciation work, yeah. Looking at mouth position.
Yes, what he calls proprioception.
He certainly does,
That sense of knowing where your muscles are.
Yeah, I absolutely. And I think that approach also really delivered results pretty rapidly with the students I was working with at the time. And it's sort of, and really I had a kind of cascade of positive experiences in relation to teaching pronunciation. And it sort of, yeah, and it then became a core part of my teaching. And, you know, it's sort of something that's been embedded now for years.
And also, I know that in your case, for example, that you've been in the business for quite a long time, there comes a time in which teachers have this idea of what else can I do? And that's usually when teachers get into materials writing, creating their own stuff for their classes, and seeing the potential of exploiting that not only in your classes, but also with, you know, commercially as it is. And then you become a writer, a materials writer, or a publisher, you know, you work with a publisher and stuff. Was that what happened to you? I mean, like, what was the initial thought that you had that made you think, I'm going into ed tech and start developing things?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There was really about 2017, sort of that kind of time, I'd sort of hit a dead end with really my development as a teacher. You know, I'd been sort of iterating hard on classroom teaching for 6-7 years at that point, and really, you know, had kind of, you know, there wasn't too much more that I could sort of pump into a language class at that point. And I began looking, one weekend I was looking around on the app store for essay writing apps, just seeing what was there. And almost everything was so bad that I was completely staggered. Like, it was just one of the sort of prominent apps was where someone had simply cut and pasted academic writing pages from Canadian universities with the watermarks still on them, with the logos, into an app. And so I was like, oh, okay, you know. And actually, my wife then went away a few weeks later, and I had one of those rare, I guess, kind of pants and pot noodles kind of weekends that you don't really get in your 40s very often with family life and children, where I was able to sit there for 3 full days for 15 hours a day, you know, not washing and sitting at a computer. And at the end of that, I created an essay writing app, essentially, or the materials for it.
That's amazing. Is that what that is? Did that experience lead you to founding Kinjugo?
Yes, it did, because I then took that to, so I was this was working at the University of East Anglia, living in a town called Norwich in the east of England, or a city, I should say. And at that time, I was a published novelist and published short story writer, and was quite involved in the writing scene in Norwich. And there's probably the most famous creative writing course in Europe is based at that university. So there was quite a community around the sort of creative writing scene there. And essentially, my publisher in Norwich was using a design agency called Robot Mascot, who have since gone on to become the leading sort of startup pitch deck design agency in England and in the whole of the UK. And broadly, I knew them socially back in the day through my publisher. So I took the idea to them and said, what do you think? And they said, well, it's absolutely terrible, but let's keep talking. So that really led into a series of conversations with them, you know, and they were saying things to me like, oh, Landa, you know, last week, we just got this 18-year-old kid, $250,000, you know, from some investors. And so through them, I had this real sort of insight into what was this kind of growing sort of startup entrepreneurial scene that really, I mean, broadly in England, between about 2015 and I guess last year, what happened in California between about 97 and 2002 in terms of like massive growth in venture capital funding, all this kind of thing, that's broadly happened here in the last sort of 6-7 years. And I kind of was able to see that in its early days through these guys. So yeah, and essentially that became, you know, the sort of starting foundation for Kinjugo. I mean, I then moved up to Yorkshire, was working a little bit for language academies and for different universities up here, and essentially just thought, why not build a game? You know, why not make a game? You know, there's people with you know, there's a huge vocabulary deficit problem that's systemic, you know, like almost it's incredibly difficult for learners coming in, you know, at post-school to have the kind of vocabulary that they need. So I came up with the idea for preposition safecracker. And the idea that it was, the idea would be that it would be very kinesthetic. So there'd be a sort of a wheel like cracking an old fashioned safe where you have numbers and you spin the dial. And I thought that would engage people's kinesthetic learning, hence the name Kinjugo. So kin is from kinesthetic and jugo is Latin for I play. So that was the kind of vibe. So I basically made it out of craft materials. Like, so I kind of constructed this game out of, you know, kind of bits and pieces of plastic broadly on a sort of, had some foam A4 pieces of card, kind of made circular holes in the foam A4 and put these dials in and then basically took that into a language academy and chucked it in front of a lot of Barani pilots who were basically studying IELTS. And I recorded the session. And broadly, there was a total riot. They loved it. They went completely crazy for it. And actually, people were fighting over it in the classroom. And somewhere I've got a recording of this, and it's like the funniest thing that I've ever heard, because there's all these guys shouting at each other. And there's me trying to cool the situation down. But that was, and then from that experience, I took the whole proposition to my really best friend from university who spent 20 years in computer games design. So he's a digital artist. His name is Kelvin Liu. He's sort of from a Malaysian Chinese background, so knows a lot of people that have been through IELTS and have been through, you know, the English language learning kind of system. And really he was like, yeah, let's do this. And from that point, we spent 2020 kind of building a demo MVP, so minimum viable product of preposition safecracker. We created a business plan and pitch decks. We then spent 2021 essentially pitching to people, so talking to angel investors and venture capitalists. And we sort of had a plan to make a pretty big product, you know, as in sort of four or five games in a bundle, and people paid to access that. And really what the investors said was, don't do that. Just create one game, you know, this demo game that you've shown us, like expand that and then just put that on the Google Play Store and, you know, start talking to people about it. And it took us it's taken us about 18 months to really kind of
polish it, yeah,
to do that. I mean, you know, building some more software for the game, testing the app, essentially creating software is very time consuming, yes, and labor intensive. And so now we're sort of talking to people. I'm talking to our students a lot who like it, who are playing with it, but I'm saying you've got to be on the App Store. So it seems that everyone that we're talking to has got students who've got Android and iPhone. So yes, that's what we're trying to sort out now. So hopefully we'll be on the App Store end of this month. And then I can kind of restart the process of, you know, talking to people about it, getting user feedback as well.
Yes.
You know, and if there's any teachers that are listening to this and want to...
Oh, yes, definitely. I will put all the information in the description box of the episode so everyone can contact you directly and or me, in for that matter. And I will definitely help them, you know, get through you and find, you know, from the source. Now, about... preposition safecracker. I know, I understand you explained the safecracker part, you know, the kind of coding, decoding and cracking codes. But is it only with prepositions or do you include other types of, you know, vocabulary?
Well, okay. So it's designed to teach phrasal verbs. So it's a product that's designed for IELTS and to prepare students for IELTS, in particular the speaking exam. So what I've created, or what we've created, is something where we've selected phrasal verbs as an example of complex language. So the idea that to score over an IELTS 6, complex language is required. So we've chosen phrasal verbs as an example of that. And we've created a game which is basically a gamified gap fill activity with 450 sentences across five different IELTS topics. So each of those phrasal verbs is embedded in a sentence that contains topic vocabulary, and also a sentence that exemplifies one of 30 grammar points. So the idea is to use, which is split across three different levels of difficulty. So the idea is to use both deductive and inductive learning, where the target language is the phrasal verb, and that's where the student is active within the game. But there's a kind of framework of language, which is including nouns and verbs, adverbs for the five different IELTS topics, and also is showing clean grammar, a clean grammar point, which is another, I guess, important part of learning for IELTS. So yeah, that's really the reasoning behind how the learning's delivered. And we are adding layers of educational assets mm-hmm. to the game on update. So we're about to drop in a kind of synonym explainer layer in the next few weeks, where every phrasal verb has, at the very least, a synonym for it to explain it, if not a slightly longer explanation. Yes. And it's kind of, I think also that the idea is to try to, or to seek ways in which the opportunities afforded by the technology create new routes to learning, which are otherwise unavailable in more traditional methods.
Have you included, or have you thought about the idea of repeating phrasal verbs or exercises? In my classes, for example, when I do any speaking activity, I tend to repeat, like from time to time, I tend to repeat the activity so that students can build up on their previous mistakes and then see if they can improve them. Of course, vocabulary is essential in that case, because I want to revise how much they can retain, how much they can remember. Have you included any of that in the app?
I think, yeah. And I think that actually the repetition is just a natural part of the gameplay. So when the student goes to play the game, they're selecting from one of three difficulty levels and they're selecting from one of five topics. So actually, when you break that down amongst 450 sentences, you're actually creating a relatively small cluster of sentences, say 15 mm-hmm. for each level. Right. So there's a kind of, or the sort of pool from which the sentences are drawn is, it's kind of big enough for there to be variety, but also small enough for there to be repetition within there. Mm. So, and I'm a big believer in the power of repetition. And I think it's sort of, I mean, earlier in the podcast, I mentioned sort of key moments in my journey as a teacher and some corners that I've turned around. And I think one of those is when I teaching in higher education, I had a grammar syllabus. I had 9 points in it. And after 2 years, I taught the same three things three times.
Yeah.
Because those had the greatest impact on outcome for the students. And those were the things which sort of delivered the biggest changes most quickly. And I think that's kind of, and that kind of thinking is also carried over into the app. I mean, my experience of teaching IELTS is that almost everyone goes into it with inadequate range of topic vocabulary. So people come to IELTS with, high school grammar and language, which they tend to assume that they can kind of stretch out and sort of turn into an IELTS 6, a sort of university entry type IELTS grade. And that's almost always not the case.
Mm-hmm.
And IELTS. So the app is really there to help students, and I guess teachers as well, find ways of delivering that level of vocabulary input relatively quickly.
I was gonna say that it's I think it's very appropriate, for example, that your app using that kinesthetic idea of gamification and the idea of repetition, I think they go hand in hand.
Yeah, no, sure. I mean there's a sort of, I mean, one of the reasons why we're doing this with Kinjugo is that both Kelvin and I think that there's a huge opportunity for gamification within education, that it seems to be a sector that kind of got going and then sort of stalled about 5 years ago. And it doesn't seem to have moved on significantly in the last sort of 6 or 7 years. And it's kind of, and yeah, it's kind of crazy. And the whole, you know, and in traditional learning, repetition mm-hmm. becomes something which gets very boring very quickly.
Yes.
In computer games.
Yeah, I think the idea of gamifying, for example, these things will, I think, will give the opportunity to learners to really experiment in different ways, pretty much with the same thing, but in different ways so they don't get bored. Because I know that attention span, especially if you have teens and younger learners, I mean, not necessarily adults, but attention span can be very, very, you know, short.
Yeah. And you know, and I think, as everyone knows in language teaching, that actually acquiring vocabulary doesn't take lots of work, but it does take regular daily effort.
Yes.
And doing it for short periods of time every day is kind of the way to do it. And I think also that students, you know, coming to language academies, coming to evening classes are sort of using the same parts of the brain that they've been using at school. You know, there's a kind of, and I think this is generally a problem in human learning, right, is that it's a sort of, there's a kind of variety of learning method is really fundamental to it. And it's sort of, and if, you know, if a learner can approach the same learning problem in different ways, you know, and whether that's, you know, copying sentences out on paper, whether it's listening, you know, whether it's playing a game, that variety becomes very important if you're asking someone to do the same kind of thing that they've been doing all day at night.
Yeah, because I also think that the idea of repeating exercises and but it's always difficult, for example, as a teacher to start, I mean, like always come up with new ways of doing the same thing. It's quite time consuming. Having an app, for example, that can supplement whatever you do in class, and then students can get that kind of repetition in terms of internalizing knowledge. Because when you learn something new, it doesn't, you need to do it again in order to internalize it. And that's pretty much, you know, like those two systems that we have, you know, the system that we have in which we learn new things, and then we have the system in which we do things automatically, like driving or, you know, like what people call muscle memory, you know?
Sure.
I think it works the same for languages. And I think that's one of the problems that in classes I see, for example, other colleagues and myself included, that we tend to teach vocabulary and then we do the practice in the classroom, that we do the free practice, the control practice and whatnot. And in the end, it's hard for me, especially if I have to follow a program, a curriculum, it's hard to go back and retake that and see. I think the opportunity of an app like this one, for example, like you know, the one that you're developing, I think it's a great opportunity for students to really, you know, like while they're playing, revisit vocabulary.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, one of the things that the technology allows is, I guess, kind of focus and depth, right? So, you know, in really any learning syllabus, including English language teaching, syllabuses tend to be quite sort of wide ranging and quite broad. And topics, grammar is introduced, you know, in a way that sort of, it's not dwelled on. You know, you might look at a particular grammar point each week. You might look at a particular vocabulary topic each week, etc. Now, one of the things which the technology allows is kind of just simple depth. I mean, going beyond, you know, if you can compare, I guess, what's printed on a textbook page to what can be contained within the software of a game, you know, it's just worlds apart. And so there's a sort of
there's an opportunity there for someone who really wants to go to town on phrasal verbs with our game, or who really wants to kind of blast themselves with topic vocabulary. Just there's a kind of quantity element to, you know, to using software, you know, which all sort of digital methods can create. So, and that's really sort of, that's one of the things that we want to do is sort of not only create games, but create games that sort of allow the user to choose their level of depth with the learning topic.
Yeah. Now, recently we've had this incredible boom. I'm sure you're aware of it. The using artificial intelligence, we have this Chat GPT, people going crazy over it. And a lot of people have talked about automation, like doing this, training this neural language model into creating new stuff, like recycling the same thing, but creating new stuff. I know this is brand new. I know that the people from OpenAI have released to the public this chatbot. A lot of people have are starting to see the potential in education. Have you thought about the possibility of including artificial intelligence and build it into your app in a way, like, for example, finding doing this repetition, but not really repeating the same boring stuff, but doing the same, because the whole point is like to create a skill in the student. Have you thought about it?
I think what I've thought about ChatGPT so far is, firstly, I've had the kind of overexcited kind of charge at it that so many haters have had, and I've been playing around with it really in terms of essay writing. So I put an essay in without a conclusion and asked it to write me an essay, asked it to write the conclusion. So, which it did very well. And I've been playing around with Bloom's taxonomy and sort of where, you know, so it's a sort of amazing skill amazing sort of piece of on that level. I think in terms of the opportunities for AI for language teaching, I think those are probably going to come most fully where it becomes voice-based. So where essentially the Alexa kind of Amazon hardware that we use, that essentially becomes a robot which the user can speak to and ask questions. Now, in that context, that will open up an immense realm of educational opportunity. Now, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, in the evenings, for example, when I'm cooking, I will usually listen to a podcast for a half an hour, 45 minutes or an hour. If instead I was, say, learning French via a voice-based interaction on AI, then that would be awesome. Now, and I think that's probably the direction of travel. You know, that's certainly what I'm already thinking about AI and education. In terms of what we do with prepositions, safecracker, I'm not too sure almost certainly we can plug an AI into that. Almost certainly we can create something in it where the student can essentially ask the app questions, or a teacher can ask the app questions and kind of moderate and curate their own learning experience, you know, via, you know, just making requests. But I think that's kind of a little bit too cool for me right now. I mean, there's just, given the level of work just to get something as simple as that game up and running, and, you know, and as well as obviously the whole, you know, this package, the branding, the kind of, you know, the route to market, the whole, you know, getting a business going is much more than just a product. The product is sort of part of this broad array of things, all of which have been working very well for people to actually engage and for people to want to use the product, etc. So, yeah, I mean, I think for me and, you know, everybody apart from a few people in California, actually implementing AI into what I'm doing is, for the time being, over the horizon. But I think it's kind of, yeah, I mean, you know, after 5 minutes with ChatGPT, I thought, you know, this is like a robot in Star Wars. You know, it's a robot brain. It's basically C-3PO, but without a body, you know.
And in going back to your app, I know that students can download it into their Android phones and start using, playing with it. Is how do you see the application of your app into the classroom? Like, can a teacher include it in their lesson plan? Or can it be seamlessly introduced in the classroom, or is it more sort of like a situation in which, okay, during my free time, I will start playing with the app?
Well, I think the idea is to create something that's good for both. You know, so I think, you know, in my classroom teaching, I've always struggled to create good kinesthetic activities. You know, they tend to be very time consuming to prepare, you know, and also often students tend to kind of quite like them. You know, all those kind of puzzle type English language teaching games with the where you sort of track phonemes across a board, and they always work incredibly well. And actually, you know, so the idea is to have something which, you know, a teacher can drop it in as a 10 minute activity, you know, and it works their way. I think also that the English language teaching industry is one where the academies providing it are often at massive variety of scale. So, which is very different from, you know, say secondary school national teaching systems. So, you know, there's a lot of language academies out there that do not have the budget for, you know, interactive whiteboards, for the kind of software that would come with those and that would have, you know, gamified elements on it for learning. So, you know, so I'm sort of, what I have in mind is this kind of world where, you know, there's a lot of English language teachers who are, you know, undersourced with educational technology, and it, you know, and they're teaching students who are coming from a secondary system where that educational technology is very integrated into their learning. And, you know, for an English language teacher to mimic that, or you know, or even just kind of play that game at all in a language academy is often difficult. So, you know, so that's really a big part of my thinking around this is to create, you know, a digital learning resource in a kind of sector where those aren't always to hand.
And what about the learning curve? I mean, is it easy to use the app, like, or does it require some sort of, you know, like getting to know the app?
I think it's designed to be very apprehensible. So I think that someone can, you know, as all good games should be, as in you kind of look at it and go and play with it for about 20 seconds, and you're like, oh, okay, that's how that works. You know, in the same way that Tetris or Candy Crush does, it's not, you know, there's not too much. Well, I think if there's a kind of big instructional sort of pre-game phase, then somehow the energy is lost, you know, and if you're dropping something into, you know, into a teaching situation, then, you know, having to spend 5 or 10 minutes explaining how the game works uses up a huge amount of teaching time, you know, and I just generally don't think we live in a world anymore where people have that kind of patience. It's like people kind of get something, they grasp it, it makes sense, and they engage with it, or it doesn't and they don't. You know, there's a sort of people's, I guess, kind of threshold of patience, I think, is quite low these days. So, yeah, so I think the gameplay itself and the way the game works is very easy to get into. I think what we probably still have to work on is some of the user experience stuff. So I think it probably needs, you know, at the moment there's 3 difficulty levels. And if you start playing it on the most difficult level, you're probably going to feel quite unhappy quite quickly. Yes. I mean, yeah, so it's, and I think also that the 1 minute mode, from what people are saying to me, is basically too short, and people engage with it and then 1 minute and then it's over and the screen comes up saying, oh no, and they do that 5 times and they're like, I've had enough. So I think playing it on a sort of basic level for 2 or 3 minutes, which are options in the games, that seems to be the route that's working. And I imagine during this year, what we'll, you know, we may well end up removing the 1 minute mode, creating something that's a little bit more tailored, that sort of eases people in terms of the difficulty.
I think it's great that people, developers, teachers, that in this gamified world of, you know, teaching apps, I think it's great that you, coming from that background as a teacher, you know what students need. You've seen it for yourself, and also, you know, doing the technical part. I think it's a great combination, but it seems to me like classrooms or language schools in general are kind of slow when it comes to adapting technologies into the typical regular, like everyday classroom. Do you still see that there's a future for digital approaches to learning? There has to be like a, do you think there will be a kind of fusion between the regular classroom and using digital tools like yours?
I suppose I really hope so. That's my source. I mean, I think yes. And I think that one of the other sort of key moments that made me think about Kinjigo, again, I was teaching around 2018, and it was around the time when the iPhones began to get bigger, right? So suddenly everybody was getting iPhones that were big enough to really watch, you know, movies on and to play games on, right? So that was kind of the change at the time. And I was in a teaching situation where in one of the groups, three of the boys were playing a car racing game against about a dozen other students who were also sitting in classes at the time, spread throughout the whole teaching center. So, and I was like, this is crazy. You know, what you should be doing is playing a language learning game versus your friends right now, where we can kind of compete against other classes. You can learn as you play. And, you know, and that was one of the moments when I just thought, actually, you know, the hardware is there, right, to do this, but the software isn't, you know, and it's kind of, and I mean, I also think in that there's a kind of, not so much in sort of, I guess, kind of, you know, I guess kind of high school and sort of, not so much in education, but within sort of professional training, there are some really awesome games that people are starting to use. So, for example, if you want to learn how to drive a truck, an HGV, there's an amazing game where you basically drive a truck across America, right? And it's kind of, and it looks like you're playing, you know, Call of Duty. Like, it looks amazing. And all you do is drive this massive truck around, right?
And those are magic, you know, magic words for my, at least my younger students, you know.
Yeah.
Counter-Strike is very old, but, no, you know, those kind of shooting games.
And if we're moving into a world, which I think we are, where, you know, the demand for learning and the need for it is increasing exponentially. You know, I mean, right now I have about 10 different types of software that I should be learning how to use. You know, I have like my stack of things that I need to know how to do is enormous, right? Now, as we move into that world and everyone sort of becomes more of a lifelong learner, you know, the way that we do entertainment and education is going to have to fuse. You know, it's like people can't sit around watching Netflix every night, you know, because professionally there are too many demands on them. But equally, people can't, you know, come home, you know, from being on a computer all day in a professional environment and go back and sit on a computer, you know, and do the same thing more or less that they've been doing all day. So there seems to me, you know, a tremendous opportunity for that world of entertainment and for that world of education to somehow meld together. And I think in 20 years, everyone's going to be sitting around in the evening, basically doing learning type activities that basically feel very much like contemporary entertainment does now, you know,
That's great. I mean, I think that taking education to a place in which you don't feel it's much like education, it's more like entertainment. I think, and a lot of people, I think, are doing that, you know, on their own, you know, like getting exposed to the language, especially if you live, I'm teaching here in Spain, and sometimes for my students, getting enough exposure to the language is like a little bit hard, except, you know, they watch their favorite TV series in English and, you know, things like that, or they do TikToks and you know, whatnot. And doing, for example, playing or using apps that don't feel like learning apps, but they're learning, I think that's a great approach.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, it is, and I think also it's something which is very natural to the emerging generation. You know, I think anyone, you know, age sort of 10 to 15 at the moment is in a world where, you know, there are apps, some of them are learning apps. There's a lot of game apps they're doing. You know, I mean, my daughter, who's 10, we gave her an iPad a few days ago. She's already downloaded about 15 apps, makeup apps, cooking apps, crazy, you know, where she chases unicorns around or something like that. And it's kind of, and there's somehow, you know, a future world, I think, where the sort of educational needs and that sort of context of just sort of playing around, playing with things, playing with these digital products, that sort of combines and begins to become something that people can really, you know, use in a way where they see, you know, incremental improvements in whatever their learning objectives are. So, and I can't really see how it could work any other way, because, you know, everybody, all professional adults seem to be going crazy all the time, desperately trying to, you know, stay abreast of the evolving, you know, technological world of their particular professional field. And, you know, and there's a sort of, people can only take so much, and it's a sort of, you know, and the way in which learning is delivered is fundamentally going to have to orient around that problem.
Yes, you know? Definitely. And what's your take? I mean, I know that you've started your own edtech startup. What has been your experience so far? What have you found as an entrepreneur yourself?
Well, I'd say really that a few key things, really. I mean, firstly, that there's a lot of venture capital money out there. You know, there's a lot of money waiting to be invested, but the threshold for someone to commit money is very high. So, you know, a business really needs to have an early stage product with users where people are paying for it. And really, that's a point where the kind of people and organizations that invest in companies, that's when they generally speaking get interested. You know, so, I mean, obviously there's exceptions to that, and it varies hugely by sector. I mean, in this country, fintech, so financial services products, get hugely funded at the idea stage because there's a very established kind of scene with those sorts of products.
Yeah, and the UK lately has been like full of this kind of activity right now, you know, entrepreneurial activity right now. How do you see the because I know you're UK based, how do you see the landscape? How do you see this going on in the UK? And do you think it's happening? Is it the same in outside the UK?
Well, I think, you know, I think what's happening in the UK at the moment is really almost a collapse of the old analog economy. You know, I mean, you know, the UK is entering recession at the moment. There's COVID-19, you know, did a lot of damage to a lot of businesses. And it's sort of, I mean, in December, I had a lot of dealings with a particular major high street bank in England, as well as one of the major insurance companies. Both of those were a total disaster. And both of the sort of internal and kind of external systems within those companies just didn't work very well. I mean, I was in a bank for about an hour as one of their employees tried to do something quite basic. I almost went and got her a Starbucks halfway through. You know, it was that kind of experience. And it's sort of, so there's a kind of sense here, I think, that, you know, that somehow the energy is leaving the old analog world, whereas the digital world is beginning to kind of, you know, grow and just become the thing that it could be. You know, and that's sort of, and I would imagine that those kind of processes are in play, you know, across Europe as well. I mean, probably the difference here is that, you know, London being the financial center of Europe, one of the financial centers of the world, and also with the deep links with England and America, is that, you know, there's just more venture capital money sitting in London. So that there's kind of the scene here has, you know, grown very suddenly and very quickly in several years, which is, you know, fueling all of these changes. But it's kind of, I mean, I think the other thing that I would say is that the sort of the difference between having an idea for a product and putting it into action is difficult, but it's far from impossible. And really, you know, the kind of entrepreneurs that I meet and other people, you know, trying to build businesses and all the rest of it, they are really people who have decided to act on an idea more than anything else. You know, and I think that's quite an optimistic point for anyone who's listening to this, who's kind of, who occasionally thinks, oh, wouldn't that be a good idea?
Yeah.
Because that's sort of, that is the starting point by which all these businesses are created. And
what about publishers? Because I know that there was an app, like a role play game, quite a couple of years ago. I think it was before the pandemic. It was developed by Cambridge. It was called Ruby Ray. And I remember that I was my school was selected as one of the pilot schools to run the game with the students. And it was a learning game in which students had to basically go through an adventure. And Ruby Ray was the protagonist of the story. Uh-huh. And it was basically an RPG. Have you contacted publishers like Cambridge University Press or Macmillan or...
Yeah. I mean, we've spoken to some of the people at Cambridge Assessment. We've sort of seen what they're doing. And I think it's, you know, I think, and they've recently launched something really cool with Minecraft, where they've got an English language learning Minecraft kind of plugin. I think often when established brands innovate, there are some different dynamics at play. And I think one of those is that often they're looking to protect their own brand by working with an established brand, right? So, and I think sometimes those kind of dynamics can become, you know, the sort of...
the hindrance?
Well, it's kind of what they lead with. Okay. And that can create disadvantages. I mean, one of the things with, you know, I guess one of the good things about what we're doing is that I'm sort of what's called in the kind of startup world, reasoning from first principles. Right. So I'm taking a problem and sort of running it through a kind of digital tech filter and sort of thinking, well, you know, what can a digital game bring to this vocabulary learning problem, you know, bring to this kind of language acquisition problem? And I think that is sort of, it's that approach which actually creates things which are in some sense new. And I'm not sure that, you know, big companies are always very good at doing that or thinking in that kind of way. I mean, for example, one of the sort of current educational gamification has a huge format problem. So, you know, if you go around and look at what people are doing, they're very often using the same formats, some of which, you know, to my mind, just simply aren't that good. I mean, there's one that's commonly used where essentially learners play really a kind of sort of puzzle type game. It was sort of Super Mario Bros. Game, where it's a platform game where they're jumping over things, they're grabbing stars, etc. And the learning element to it is delivered via a panel that drops into the middle of the screen with a question on it. The learner has to then answer the question, and then the game continues. Right? Now, to my mind, I don't like that. You know, I think it's kind of, I think the learning has to be integrated into the gameplay. I think there needs to be some sort of fusion between what you do and how you learn. And the idea that you just have a normal computer game that is then interrupted by an educational interaction, which then disappears.
Yes. Because pretty much Ruby Ray was that. I mean, basically right. The character had to answer some questions and there was some sort of interaction. And that was the learning part. That was it. But then the rest of the game was just like a regular, normal game that basically didn't yield any other educational benefit, you know? So I think what you mentioned is really interesting, like incorporating everything into the whole gaming experience is educational.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like, I mean, the ideas for format that I have are really very different from the example that I just gave. You know, like the games that I want to build are much more, you know, the learning is somehow some seamless and kind of saturates the entire user experience. And I think that that sort of principle is quite rare in educational gamification, or I think that quality rather to games is quite rare.
And I think that's very interesting, and that would be like the logical approach to do it. I mean, like nowadays.
One, and it's a kind of, sorry, there's a couple of examples from the world of sort of digital innovation, which speak to this point quite well. So there's a founder called Ryan Peterson, who runs a business called Flexport. And what Flexport does is essentially have a platform where exporters from country A to country B can put all of the information for all of the part of the companies that take a product from company A to company B, right? So it's a sort of like it's like when you post a parcel, you know, and you can kind of track it. It's that, but for global export, right? Now he came to that because he was exporting bikes from China to the US and realized that the way that the logistics companies were working was just completely insane. They were essentially following the cargo ships with couriers on planes with the paperwork, right? So the logistics people were just sending literally guys with briefcases, you know, who were doing a kind of mad, you know, kind of plane, train, automobile kind of passage following this cargo across the world. So he basically just said, well, why not just do all the tracking via a digital platform, right? And then he created what's called a landing page. So it's basically a website where you then reach out to people and say, if you're interested in this idea, you know, kind of do something on, make a comment on our website or get in touch. And he did that. And 3 days later, Saudi Aramco, which is like the biggest company in the whole world or something like that, signed up to it, right? And that's often the kind of thinking that you see in founders who are sort of innovating in a sort of way that kind of seems to make sense. You know, it's like they're looking at the problem and they're thinking, well, you know, there's actually, you know, a sort of digital approach to this can actually just really move things around in a big way. And I mean, it's a similar thing with health tech, actually. So, you know, with, you know, Apple watches, Garmin watches, the Whoop band, I think it's called, all of those brands, you know, simply if you're measuring health metrics 200 times a day, the data from that is going to be substantially different. I mean, of a different order than if you're measuring those health metrics once a month. And the sort of conversation that can be created about a person's health from that volume of data, again, is, you know, on a different level entirely from,
definitely,
you know, intermittent medical checkups in a medical, you know, facility. So, you know, that's kind of how I'm thinking around games. It's about, well, actually, there are things that can be done via this gamification approach, which probably lead to some quite deep fundamental changes in people's kind of learning capacity and that kind of thing.
And now to wrap up, you're saying that the app, your app, is available on the Android App Store.
Yeah, so it's on the Google Play Store. It's also on our website, which is kinjugo.com, and that's K-I-N-J-U-G-O. There's a button there that takes you straight to the Google Play Store, so that's an easy way to get to
it. And for iPhone users, it will be available sometime later this month.
We are working on it very hard. We're trying to avoid spending £900 on buying the iMac that's needed. So we're doing it with Amazon Web Services. And so it's taking a little bit of thinking about because we haven't done that before. So yeah, but we're going to be there very soon. And at that point, I will be reaching out to a lot more teachers and kind of saying, can you play with the app with your classes for a bit? And here are promotional codes where you can do it for free for a month. And then
I will make it available in the episode description as well.
Yeah. And the other thing that's worked well actually so far is me coming into classes on a WhatsApp video call and just talking to people, introducing the app. And so I'm sort of very happy to do that. So, you know, fingers crossed, we'll manage to find some people who like the app this year and who kind of want to sort of keep talking to us about using it and also, you know, giving us feedback so we can actually, you know, develop the app according to the needs of the users, which is another massive advantage of this digital approach, is that we can create something which is very much tailored to what the audience wants.
That's what we want, tailor-made material. Yeah. So, Lander, thank you very much for your time. It's been a great conversation, very insightful into a world in which I've always thought about, you know, edtech and all, you know, creating your own stuff materials. It's been very eye-opening for me, and I hope it's been for, you know, one out there, the listeners of the podcast.
Frank, thanks very much for your time. Thanks very much for this opportunity. And, you know, great to meet you. And
thank you.
Yeah, we'll absolutely, I'll be in touch.
Yes, definitely. So thank you for tuning in to another episode of What You Say in English, where we had the opportunity to talk to Lander Hawes, the CEO of Kinjugo. And there are quite a few takeaways for me in this conversation. The conversation was really insightful in my case. I would say that one of the key takeaways from our conversation is that the importance of repetition in language learning is crucial. Lander shared that he's a big believer in the power of repetition and how Kinjugo's game is designed to make repetition more engaging and fun. This is especially important for students who may find traditional learning methods to be a little boring and repetitive. Another takeaway of the conversation was the potential of gamification in education. Lander and I discussed how Kinjugo's game is different in some ways and how technology allows for focus and depth in learning. This is essential, and I think and I agree with him that there's very little being done nowadays. Pretty much most of the gaming apps that have been developed in language teaching or to promote language teaching and language instruction, they're pretty standard and they become pretty much the same over and over way of approaching gaming. So I think that the idea of including or building a game that it's everything is an opportunity to learn, I think it's a game changer, so to speak. The game also has 3 difficulty levels, which gives learners the opportunity to learn at their own pace and gradually increase their level of difficulty. Finally, Lander discussed the implications of Kinjugo's game for the future of English learning. To me, that's very important. He shared that the game is designed to be very apprehensible, making it easy for teachers to incorporate it into their lesson plans. I really hope so. This is something that I will have to see for myself, because I think that apps can be a little problematic sometimes because they tend to focus on very specific things and sometimes they miss the point. I think that I felt a lot of the frustration that Lander has felt when he was browsing the App Store, the Google Play Store, and the iOS App Store. I've also felt the same frustration trying to find something that I could easily integrate into my classes. He also mentioned the possibility of including artificial intelligence in the game, which would further enhance the learning experience for students. Overall, Kinjugo's game is a valuable tool, I think, for both teachers and students, providing a fun and engaging way of improving your English language skills, especially if you're preparing for an exam like IELTS. And I think it's fully transferable to other exams like Cambridge exams. I really hope that you found this conversation with Lander Hawes to be informative and that you will consider incorporating Kinjugo's game into your English language teaching experience. Remember that in the episode description, you will find promotional codes so you can use the app for 1 month. Thank you, as always. Thank you very much for joining me this time. If you're getting this episode from another platform, you may not be able to see the video. But if you do it with Spotify, you will see that you're watching the video as well. So I really hope to do more future interviews like this one on video format. And until next week, bye-bye.